This is John J. York, Eric from the 80s TV show Werewolf the Series, and you're listening to the DETV Podcast.
Welcome back to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all TV shows that have been canceled in the sci-fi, fantasy, and horror genre. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
I am Chandra.
And today we are continuing our coverage of The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, with episodes 3 and 4, What Was Sundred and Undone. And I don't have the title of the other one. What's the title of the other one? The first thing I remember is fire. Fire is bad. Episodes 3 and 4. Bria struggles with an unsavory new duties. Deet and Hup get a hostile welcome from the Stonewood clan, and Rian begs his Madra, I'm assuming mother, for help. And in episode 4, while Bria races to solve a puzzle in a hidden room beneath the throne, the Chamberlain hatches a plan to catch Rian and win back the Emperor's trust. There is already problems in the schizoid ranks, as we saw in the last episode. I digress. Let's start with our notes at the top with this one.
Okie dokie. Let's see. So, where did my notes start?
They should start at the beginning of the episode with the bells on some girl's hat.
Yes, that would be Bria. So, her mother did not, her behavior from the last episode, her mother wasn't very fond of it and ordered her to go join the Lesser Service for erasing the memory of Sifun, which is one of the elders in the Sifun clan. So she is ordered to go, like I said, Order of Lesser Service, where she has to go give podlings baths. And she is despising this experience completely. One of the podlings is completely flailing and going nuts. And then the podling is struggling so bad that it breaks loose. And she makes a deal with it. She goes, listen, I'll let you play. I won't give you a bath as long as you don't tell on her. But you find out that the podling does end up squealing on her.
The someone points out that they expected the princess to be shinier and neater, but she is doing this because she destroyed the memory of someone, and this is basically like punishment. But they're expecting the princess to always be like, you know, happier, shinier, glowier kind of you know,
the reason why she has to wear that hat is because the podlings, they kind of operate on a different mental level. So the hat is to try to keep them distracted while giving the baths and to do what you're supposed to do. And you're not, it's because it's lesser service. You're not supposed to be very regal in that position. And it was, the elder of the Sifun that she erased the memory of. That's what that is.
And our boy happens to have what looks like Gelfing juice with him that he stole from the schizoids.
That would be the essence of Mirian, the Gelfling that was killed in a sacrifice to the Dark Crystal by the Skeksis. That is the liquid that was stolen that he's carrying around. It's the last of her essence.
I wonder if a Gelfing drinks another Gelfing's juice. Is that like being a vampire? Like if I drank your blood?
Why? I never even thought about that. I mean, I guess. Blood is essence.
Yeah, basically. it also looks like Energon, you know, the substance the Transformers drink.
Yes.
What's funny is that in a comic book called Void Rivals right now, there's two alien species called the Zertonians and the the names are really hard to pronounce, but I'll digress. The Zertonians and the Agorians, and they're being invaded by the Quintessons right now. And prior to that, one of them got seriously injured to the point of death, and the Autobot Springer transforms into like a helicopter and a car. He's green. He was in the movie. Pours Energon into the gem on the head of the alien because he recognizes it as an Energon port, and it brings her back to life. And he's like, you're not whatever species you think you are, you're Cybertronian. And she's like, that's impossible. We're not very technologically based. Because she's like, that doesn't matter. That thing in your forehead comes from Cybertron.
Right. Like, that thing in your head says a completely different story.
Yeah, basically. It's like, you know, it's led to believe they're always one thing, but no, they're part of something else. In this Schizoid's chamber of horrors, what looks like a Stegosaurus with gems on its back. I thought that was kind of cool. I want one of those.
Yeah, they have a lot of cool creatures.
Yeah, the creature effect shop just went, like, nuts with this. Definitely. And it's some of the best puppet work we will see until, like, the Muppet Show comes around.
Yeah, I was really, especially with some of the movements, especially battle movements, those are really a lot more advanced than when they originally started. So I've been watching a lot of that. They move really seamlessly. So it's been really cool to see that.
But you can see a lot of the movements being exactly like the way you'd see it on, like, for instance, The Muppet Show, the one that just premiered a couple weeks ago with Sabrina Carpenter.
Didn't see that one.
It was a 45-minute little special, and it's on Disney Plus. It's The Return of The Muppet Show with very special guest Sabrina Carpenter. Yay! It was produced by Seth Rogen.
Oh, cool.
It was a lot of fun, and everyone loved it. And I'm not being, like, sarcastic about this. This isn't like, you know, like, internet doing things, you know, like, new product comes out and everyone hates it, like, you know, Alita 1 will become the new Prime coming up in Transformers, and the whole internet was totally happy about it.
I'll have to definitely go watch it, because I think the last Muppet thing that I enjoyed was Muppet Haunted Mansion, so I'll have to check it out.
That was cute, but yeah, this is a true return to form with The Muppet Show, again with special guest Sabrina Carpenter.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm open for more of them. But maybe we'll see a resurrection of Dark Crystal. Anyway, moving on. Let's go on with your notes with the whoever the woman is in the chair, the queen.
The Almadra.
Yes, yes, yes. By the way, I do love the little guy, the little brown yapping monster thing. He's got an eye patch on. That's so adorable.
The little fluffballs?
Yes, but he's got an eye patch.
It kind of reminds me, I know this is so funny, but it's just in the realm of puppetry. It reminds me of Sir Didymus with the eye patch.
And he presents to her the, you know, the essence, and she's like,
don't care.
You're crazy, like, get out of here, you know, says yeah, he's not well in the so head.
So the Almadra, which is the queen of the Gelflings, is convinced at this point by her daughter, Seldron, to address the kingdom, because they're worried. You know, the kingdom's worried because, you know, it's her job to pacify and soothe the people, especially since Rian was presented as the murderer of Miron in the last episode.
Yeah,
so she's talking to her mom like, hey, you should probably address this. This is your job. And her mother's like, you know, you're right. We should probably go do that. And at this point, I believe her name is Bria, which is the other sister of Seldron, because the Almadra has three daughters. But she sneaks in to obtain the brightest crystal, which is what she was told to obtain when she erased the elder's Seafren's memory in the last episode as well.
I just don't think anyone believes Rian, because the Schizoids seeded the deceit when they found out who it was that was spying on them.
Yeah, it's because the Gelflings have the ability to dream fast or dream share, and so in order to diminish his accountability or his credibility within their community to cover up what they did, they're like, can't dream fast with him because it's going to spread the crazy, so he's lying. And so, like, because the Skeksis have been there for so long and have kind of been like their overlord protectors and helped them with, you know, their crops and et cetera, et cetera. They feel more obligated and inclined to listen to them. And kind of like their word is law. So, which makes anything Rian at this point says completely irrelevant and not credible.
Go on with your notes.
Oh, and then I was going to say, at this point, you know, after the Almadra goes to talk with the Gelflings, that's when Deke comes back into the episode and requests a meeting with her, But it's interrupted by Rian because Rian's like, listen, like, I'm not dealing with you people. I'm not doing this. I'm going to get to the bottom of this, and everybody's going to know the truth because we can't live like this. So he convinces the other Gelflings to let him in to go see the Almadra, which is where she goes, we can't listen to him because that's where the Skeksis had poisoned her about the dream sharing being contagious. And he's captured at that point while Dee is outside trying to get in to tell them about, you know, this dream, this vision she's had, but she's locked outside and kind of has to figure out her own thing from that point. From there, Mother Agra,
the ancient old woman from the original movie.
Yeah, she has, like, the ram's horn and the one eye, which kind of, when it comes out, which kind of reminds me of, especially since, you know, she does see the past, present, and future, it reminds me of the Fates in the Hercules movie.
Mm-hmm. And she's the one who takes care of, like, the last remaining Gelfling.
Yes. So, the Mother Augur confronts the Skeksis about the crystal because, you know, she's come back from being beyond the stars because the crystal is crying out to her because there's something wrong with it. It's called the Crystal of Truth before it's called the Dark Crystal because that's its intention, is to reveal the truth within yourself, others, and things around you.
Correct.
And she finds a way. They're just like, listen, you abandoned the crystal. You accepted our gifts that we gave you so we can have control and power over the crystal. You accepted our gifts. You go back to the stars where you've been stargazing. We don't need you. This is ours now. Kind of get over it. And as she's leaving, because she's so upset, you know, because like I said, the crystal's crying out to her, she ends up stumbling upon the crystal where she meets her prior self before the crystal was corrupted. And it kind of gives her, like, the quick rundown as to why the crystal has been pointing and shows her the vision of what the Skeksis have been doing. And basically she has to go find the song to help heal the crystal because she has lost the song of the crystal and her people from wandering for so long and not being attached. What the Skeksis are doing, they're not just sacrificing the Gelflings to the crystal. There's Thrall, which I'm like assuming is like their version of like the elf afterlife or like their regenerative, recyclative properties of, you know, like afterlife rebirth. So when a Gelfling dies, they are returned to Thrall, which is where like the crystal and stuff gets their powers. But because they're taking the essence of the Gelflings, they're not going back to the Thrall. So it's breaking up the cycle and everything that's going on. Basically making everything off balance and causing the quickening to come on faster, which is the quickening was prophesized many, many decades ago. And is causing a bigger issue and a bigger chaos within the whole ecosystem of the Gelfling and Skeksis world.
And that's the end of the episode, the first of the two episodes we're covering.
Yes.
All right, moving on to the second one, which is the first thing I remember is fire. Why don't you start with your notes for it?
So where I started picking up on notes in this was when, hold on, let me scroll up real quick. Her name is the sister Bria. Goes, like I said, because she had broken into the chamber after the Almadra had gone out. She goes into the chamber and she retrieves the brightest stone that she was told to retrieve. And then she brings it.
Whoops, sorry.
Huh?
No, sorry, go ahead. Something just started playing.
Oh. The brightest stone, and she brings it to the new elder, which is Elder Olnekra, I think I pronounced that right.
Mm-hmm.
Because she released this is from the tribe speaker, but she killed the other elder's memory. And, you know, she's kind of like, right at first when she goes, here's your payment, tell me what I need to know, because she's trying to find answers. And the new Elder Sifa is like, hey, it's not payment. I literally just gave you the answer. This is what you have to do to release this moth. And now this moth that's inside the crystal, she finds out is to be a totem of her clan that leads people to the answers that they seek. And then when she sings, the Sifa sings to this crystal, it hatches the moth and then brings her to this cave, like, you know, kind of like, hey, follow me, follow the bouncing ball. And where she, and in this case, she's trying to resonate with the right stone sequence to, you know, find out its secrets, which its secrets and stuff. And it's, it, you know, so it's taking a little while. And at the same time that this is happening, I didn't catch the Skeksis name, but he's the high pitched one. He is demoted from his position within the Skeksis community. And because he's demoted, the king is like, oh, I'm going to promote the general. And then he's like, I take that back. I'm not promoting you. I am telling you that this is the position that you're going to take. So it kind of takes away the glory of the promotion. And so, and that Skeksis, that other Skeksis hand is taken from him by the general. And they're trying to, the scientist is trying to, trying to convince the new council not to drain so many Gelfling at once,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to be taxing on the population. And he's just pushing because this is what the, you know, this the king wants. He wants this everlasting life, this essence that they got from the other Gelfling. And he's like, listen, how many? And he's, you know, trying almost getting violent. This was the scientist that lost his eye to the beetle, and he's like, give me a number. And he's like, 50. To which then he calls the hunter and sends the hunter out to gather what they need.
I also like, and, before you go any further, the Gelfling that shows up to see Hup, the little guy with the flat face.
The Podling.
Yeah.
That would be Deet, dressed as a moth.
Okay, yeah. Deet's glow makes her look ethereal and incredible special effects that just are... very supernatural just by the way it is. And then you have the finding of the Seven Clans cave of
yes.
the world. The Dretchen, it's called?
Yeah, that's where Bria is taken to the moth, and she kind of has to like figure out the resonation of the stones.
You can see a lot in many different ways how vibrant the world is through the entire show. Even in the Skeksis chamber versus the movie where everything is just like depressing, cold, and dank and dark.
Yeah, this one where the architecture has more swirls in life and like you can see vibrational patterns and the ethereal patterns in literally everything. Not just you know, the stationary stuff, but also the nature that surrounds everything as well.
I am curious what the hell they're eating at the dinner table. I'm wondering if it's just, like, all just gooey, like, candy made into something. I mean, they're puppets and not people eating this, but it just, it all looks incredibly gross.
And the sounds their mouth makes is also slightly infuriating. I don't like listening to people eat, and they're just the worst. They are disgusting.
I mean, it's just like, it looks like KY jelly that they're spraying on stuff, or it's drooling out of their mouth. Because in Alien, when the alien drools, it's heated KY jelly. Did you know that?
No, but that's disgusting.
Yes. It's gallons and gallons of KY jelly heated, so it turns into this just basically slime watery substance. KY jelly has many applications, people, not whatever your dirty minds are thinking of.
Apparently, it's also used for alien slime.
Well, what's the stuff they stick on your belly to look at the baby?
That's an ultrasonic gel.
Oh.
it helps with radio frequencies. But yeah, it kind of feels the same. It's a little bit thicker consistency, but it's gross, regardless.
Yeah. I gotta assume that everything in the room was some kind of like just plastic prop and nothing actually probably smelled bad. Because no one having to consume anything and these were just puppets versus if this was a meal and these were people in costumes, you know, food like that to rot after a while would smell awful. There have been many cases in horror movies where there's some kind of feast or banquet and the food was left out under lights or overnight and they came back to it and it had rotted so fast or the lights just killed it. And they had to redress the entire banquet of food.
That's gross. But, like, they're doing a really good job with creating, like, this grotesque, like, in, like, gluttonous creature You know what I mean? Like, especially with dealing with puppets, and it's maybe a little bit harder to convey normal things to be able to do with, you know, other means outside of puppeteering. Mm-hmm. But they're really doing a really good job with showing the, like I said, the grotesque and the gluttonous and just the overall decay and grossness of these beings. It's I really like seeing it.
The woman who does the voice of Mother Agra, she's been doing puppet work for a while. She was in the most recent, like, Fraggle Rock, which I don't know if that's getting another season, but it's called Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, and the first Snowfall Fraggle Rock that came out last year. So I guess Fraggle Rock's continuing.
I need to watch it. That was my favorite as a kid.
It's on Apple TV. And she was also in the last Muppet production, which was called The Muppet Mayhem. It was about the Muppets, the band, you know, the Muppets, going on a road tour.
Mm-hmm.
That was not overly well received because I don't know why people don't like the band, but yeah, that was a thing. I saw a couple episodes. I thought it was fine, but it only got one season before Disney canceled it, so.
Boo.
Yeah, as is the way. But again, like I said, there's hope yet with this entire Jim Henson universe, as the Muppet Show revival was insanely well received. So, having your first guest on a show like that being Sabrina Carpenter, that can be a pretty big boon.
Oh, I agree.
Next up would be like they get Taylor Swift or something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it would be cool if they had some actors too, not just singers. But I digress.
Yeah.
What is this thing in the cage in the Skezoids place? It looks like a spider with arms. Did you see that?
Yes. Wasn't that the beetle?
Was that the beetle? It's huge. That thing is massive, though. The beetle is small.
Oh, no, that's the hunter. That's the hunter.
Oh,
I am so sorry.
Okay, yeah. And then there's this little green thing with little eyes that poke out of its head. That looks adorable. I kind of want all these creatures just hanging around my my place once in a while.
I don't want the creature toward the end, though. The ones in the pit, I'm all set.
Oh, yeah. They look kind of frightening.
But so once the hunter is released to try to go, you know, get track down 50 Gelflings, Mother Audra is walking through the woods and has arrows launched at her, where she meets one of the Mystics, which is the first time we encounter the Mystics in this series. And the Mystics have four arms, and this one happens to be called Archer. He explains to her that in order for her to do what she needs to do, she needs to learn the song again, but she lost it because she's too, you know, gallivanting too much within the stars. So he's like, there is somebody who can help you, and he launches an arrow and kind of disappears from there while Mother Audra is basically stuck there yelling into space. But he leaves an arrow behind with a clue. And then that's when we go back to the cave that you were talking about before with Bria, which is one of the princesses from the Almadra. And she figures out that the natural order of the stones is that all the species are all one. It's not like one ranks higher than the other. They are all the same. They're all one being.
Mm-hmm.
And this triggers a vibrational response and awakens this stone-like structure golem creature that uses what we would associate it with a record recorder, because it's the same principle, but it's etched into stone in their arm.
Mm-hmm.
And its name is Lore. And it's the guardian, and the guardian of her, like, you know, her journey, her answers, and she needs to get to the circle of the sun. And you know, they hear this within the chamber. Her sister goes down, and it kind of like gets defensive. She's like, "Nope, it's my sister." And apparently, it appears that the Gelflings knew about this creature, but they didn't really want it around because apparently it speaks of heresy, which I'm assuming at this point that is another lie from the Skeksis, as they are known to be full of them at this point. And then it switches over to Rianne with the Podlings, where the Podlings are being all cute and speaking Podling, which is kind of reminds me of Sims because it's just gibberish. And, you know, there's music, there's drinking, and he's flanked by three Gelfling, one of them being Mira's sister, and then another one being a brother, I believe, of the Gelfling that's being held by the Skeksis, and someone else. And he's like, "Listen, I'm not going with you guys anywhere. I'm not doing this. Like, I'm trying to tell you the truth. Dream fast with me. And they finally give in, and, you know, he puts the Mira's essence on the table, and they start dream fasting, and while they're dream fasting, a fourth Gelfling enters. And if you've been paying attention, that fourth Gelfling is actually Rian's dad. And they dream fast together, and they find out that, you know, the dream fasting is true, and that the Skeksis have been lying to them about, you know, the dream fasting being contagious and whatever. And because they dream fast all together, they end up creating a dream etching on the table. And Mira's sister's like, I know that symbol. She's shown that one to me before. We need to go back to, the Mother Audra and let her know what's going on. And that's before the hunters jump upon them, but close in and separating them all. Rian and his dad kind of have a brief conversation about how they're going to handle the hunter.
It's in the last 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of skip to the head of the notes of your notes. My notes are almost kind of yours. The big fight at the end between the Skeksis and the Gelfling, the hunter, the black Skeksis, which looks fantastic and a better design than the other ones, with the ground looks like a bunch of eyeballs on tentacle weeds or mouths is creepy and reminds me of some kind of terrible anime.
they remind me, the mouth thing reminded me of leeches.
Yes.
Like, just like, you know, like, because the teeth, the carnivorous teeth, kind of remind me of leeches. But when Rian's dad sacrifices himself and falls into that pit, and then that stupid hunter somehow does not die, and it comes out all, like, mechanical and, like, creepy moving, and it takes Rian right up the tree, that swift movement for a puppet was intense.
Indeed. One of the things I want to point out is that the music in this episode, as I said before, Louise Lentier is the director of all these episodes, and he does a bang-up job with it. The crew that it takes to make this movie would take an entire episode or two to go over by itself. I mean, some of the lines of this film, TV show, with the people that have to work on it, for special effects and visual effects, you have key puppet fabricator Jasper Anderson, creature sculptor Greg Arrowitz, HOD fur technician Lisa Barbett, CFX trainee Alice Jacobs, sculptor Robert Bennett, creature wrangler, compositioner, a name I can't even pronounce. It's just like one name, like Madonna. Digital matted painter Michael Scowrow. There are so many people that worked on this. We would need an entire episode at the end to probably go through all of the credits for just like one episode alone. It's crazy how many people worked on this show.
Definitely.
It's absolutely nuts. Anyone who hears about this podcast, if you want to come on the show because you worked on Dark Crystal and you never really got to talk about it because the show got canceled 6 years ago, please come on with us. We're going to try and have somebody who is a major puppeteer in the Jim Henson universe on the show with us, hopefully at the end of the podcast where we do a lot of the major interviews. So, but if you happen to hear about this podcast or you know someone who worked on it, please reach out to, have them reach out to thatradioofhorror@gmail.com. Don't forget to also send us a review on any of the platforms you happen to listen to us on, Amazon Music, Apple iTunes, Spotify, whatever we're on, please leave a rating, or you can also leave a comment on RadioHorror.com. Chandra, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram. My name is Blunderland on there with two N's.
I can be found on Radio Horror on Sunday nights from 10 to 12, or you can also find me on Radio Horror on Facebook or Instagram or Blue Sky. And you can find me on one of the other podcasts I do, for instance, the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast. I talk about vampire movies 5 minutes at a time. I am wrapping up Blade, and later this summer I will do Humanist Vampire Seeking Consenting Suicidal Person. It's a handful of a title, but it's a great film. I will also be at PAX East at the end of this month. You can find me on a panel on Thursday for the history of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle video game franchise. Otherwise, I'll be at PAX East all weekend long. And I want to say thank you to Chandra for coming on the show with me, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with another exciting episode of Dark Crystal.